Welcome everybody to episode 82 of High Tech on the Low. Michael, how are you this morning?
Great to be here with you, Jordan.
Really good to have you in the studio. We're here with Michael Eisenberg, partner at Aleph VC. We're always very excited to have guests like this, VC guests in our studio, so very excited. As always, we're sponsored by Front Team with 12 different communities, 6 verticals, and 3,000 members looking to connect. And as always, please throw us a subscribe, follow, listen, whatever it is, and listen to all the episodes we've got on Spotify, Apple, and elsewhere. So Michael, I'm really excited to have you here to talk to you kind of about the world of tech, obviously, in general, but one of the very exciting things that we're going to talk about is actually the world of agriculture, which is kind of, in a sense, like a low tech that a lot of people think about, but you're kind of bringing the high tech to it. So first of all, let's hear about who you are. Could you just introduce yourself for the people at home? And then we'll get right into it.
Sure. So as you hear from my accent, even though we're in Tel Aviv, I wasn't born here. Born, bred, and raised in New York, Manhattan, to be more accurate.
Okay.
And
Upper West?
Upper West Side, yeah.
Okay.
And I guess educated there as well. I moved to Israel in 1993, so I've been here almost 30 years.
Should I tell you it's older than me?
Way to drive the dagger deep. Want to spin it around?
Turn around. Say it there.
Yeah. I moved to Israel in 1993. I started my career for about a year and a half in political consulting. And basically since 1995, I've been in the venture capital business for one form or another. Married to Yaffa, father of 8 children.
8 children, wow.
Yeah, grandfather. And
do any of them have a startup yet?
One is actually thinking of working on one right now.
Okay, cool.
For my hobbies, I write books.
Okay.
And I've written 8 books, 6 in Hebrew and 2 in English,
mm-hmm.
Most of which are at the intersection of the Bible, the Torah, and modern economics.
Okay.
Or Torah economics interpreted into modern economics, 2 in English. One is called The Tree of Life and Prosperity. And
that's a new book, right? I think I saw that come
it's
out.
It's been out about a year and 3 or 4 months. And the other one is called The Vanishing Jew on the Book of Esther.
So okay.
The first one's on the Book of Genesis, and this one's on the Vanishing Jews on the Book of Esther.
Very interesting. Very interesting. So basically, we have author, VC, political strategist, all
together. I'm not really a political strategist. I did that for a year and a half of my career.
You want to term yourself as that?
No, definitely not.
Okay. So, and with your job at Aleph, what are you normally doing like on a day-to-day? I mean, what is like the world of a partner at a VC?
Really divides into two. The most important part of the job is to look for the next great entrepreneur who's going to do something massively disruptive, invest in him or her, and hope or work towards making that an asymmetric outcome. You can lose one time your money in venture capital, but you can make significant multiples. And then
sure.
The second part of the job is working on the existing portfolio companies, serving on the board, servicing the entrepreneurs. We pride ourselves at Aleph on servicing entrepreneurs. That's
okay. What does that mean?
Helping them hire talent, find talent, hire talent, business development, strategy, board work, market direction, etc.
So it's really like a comprehensive service package in that sense, like really helping them grow. You're not just here like, here's the money, go have fun, let's see you in 2 years, right? You're there with them.
My job is to be the best referenced venture capitalist on the planet so that the entrepreneurs who work with me currently tell the next guy or woman that they need to come work with me and Aleph because we provide the best level of service to them. It's not just a check. It's the connectivity of our network. It's the hard work we hope we do on their behalf. It's their company at the end of the day, and they're the heroes of the game, and we try to be kind of the backstage stage hands that help them go do this.
Yeah, for sure. And so when you're also, let's say, evaluating these startups and entrepreneurs specifically, what's like on your kind of roster here? What are you looking for? You know, the as they always say, you know, the intangibles in baseball, right? What are you looking for in these entrepreneurs?
Now, the funny thing about baseball is we also used to talk about the intangibles in baseball and the 5 tool players.
There you go.
If you're old enough to remember that.
I do. I played baseball, so I was a pitcher, right? And that's what I always remember.
5 tools, except now in Billy Bean baseball, everything is quantifiable,
exactly.
Right? So I still think that venture capital is more of an art than a science. It's less Billy Bean, more 5 tools.
Gotcha.
And more intangibles. But entrepreneurs that have something to prove have chips on their shoulders. Josh Wolf is fond of saying chips on shoulders, put chips in pockets.
I like that.
He's another venture capitalist. And I guess the key elements are, how resilient and optimistic are you as a founder? Because you get a lot of no's as a founder,
right,
and an entrepreneur. And you need to be absolutely resilient and resolute in what you're trying to do
mm-hmm.
in order to get there. I guess the second thing is we had this line at Benchmark Capital where I was before Aleph, which was we're looking for learn-it-alls, not know-it-alls.
Learn it alls, not know it alls. Yeah. Okay, that's actually a very kind of modest way of looking at an entrepreneur, I would say.
I think it is.
Yeah.
And because it's a journey.
Right.
And it changes. Okay. And it evolves.
Right.
And sometimes you need to pivot. And so learn it alls are super important. And I think one of the questions I always ask entrepreneurs is, what do you know that nobody else knows or understands?
Right.
That's like the unique insight. What's the leg up? And then obviously, you know, businesses that compound are able to define the field in which the game is played. All those are very important.
Right. So now, moving kind of a little forward, you know, at Olive, obviously you guys have a pretty vast portfolio. What are your, say, like your main priorities as a VC? What are your kind of focus in terms of your investments?
Like which areas?
Yes. Which sectors, you know, in fields? Maybe there's not, you know, but
I'm a generalist. I think the playing field evolves, and that sector specific venture capital has been difficult to prosecute with good returns. And okay. So I'm just a generalist. It's easy for me to be a generalist. I don't really know anything about anything in technology.
Okay.
Like, I can say some of the words.
Sure.
But I don't really understand anything. You know, my degree's in political science.
So okay.
I wrote my last line of code in the 7th or 8th grade.
Okay.
In a language right. That probably doesn't exist anymore.
There you go. Okay. So back in the old days when it was just like truly the line on the screen, that's it, right? That's all you saw?
Oh, sure. I mean, you know, there was Logo and Basic. I think that's where
basic.
I stopped.
Wow. Okay, cool.
I'm old, man.
we were not aging you here. So you're a
I'm open about it. I'm 51 years old. I don't get these people who don't want to talk about their age. I'm 51.
Good.
I'm very thankful, you know, to God that I'm still here today and kicking and screaming and having this podcast with you. It's like,
amen.
You know.
There we go. Keep going on it, though. So I want to know,
young people have ageism. Give me a break, man.
There you go. Now, when you're saying you're a generalist, you know, it's very interesting to me because at the end of the day, you know, you hear a lot in the VC world, people say, oh, well, we focus only on this type of company or this type of entrepreneur or this type of field. What has been your kind of like, I guess, the driving like fire in you to kind of be this generalist and say, you know what, I'm looking at, in a sense, the 5-tool entrepreneur. That's who I'm focusing my investments in. And that's where I want to go. I'm going to kind of ignore the noise of all the other guys.
I guess I have a deep belief. I've kind of articulated this in a blog post called Long Humanity.
Okay.
I have a deep belief in technology creating a better humanity, technology creating a better economy.
Mm-hmm.
It's not some kind of techno-utopianism, but I think the world moves forward and it requires innovation in order to move itself forward.
Sure.
And if we kind of point technology in the right direction in which it empowers people instead of disempowering them, it enables them to make a better living instead of impoverishing them. It enables us to have, you know, broader health and health care. And in general, aligns the interests of customers and businesses, we'll get to a better place with humanity. And I have a real belief that entrepreneurs are able to do that if you just point them in the right direction. So the businesses that I'm after,
mm-hmm.
and my passion is, number one, building companies or investing in companies that build better tools and innovations for humanity. And my second passion is Israel.
Okay.
The reason I made Aliyah is I got challenged when I was 20 years old by Rabbi Yehuda Amital. He said, you know, if you want to do something meaningful, basically, I'll shortcut the story. You ought to make Aliyah, move to Israel, and set up a factory that will employ 10,000 people to earn an honest and decent living.
Mm.
First time I ever heard a rabbi talk about the economy or business.
That's very tachlis. You know?
Yeah, it's like a mitzvah.
Right.
A commandment and a religious imperative.
Mm-hmm.
And it had a huge impact on me. And I kind of decided on the spot that I'd make Aliyah and try to employ 10,000 people.
Wow. Okay.
And so I am very passionate about growing the Israeli economy and turning Israel into the best place in the world for people to earn an honest and decent living.
Okay.
And turning Israel into the best place in the world to raise a family.
Okay.
That matters to me a lot.
Well, so that's a perfect segue, I think, then into kind of discussing this other element, you know, of like a recent project, we can say, for you, which is your kind of focus and I wouldn't say maybe pivot, maybe a shift, maybe just kind of opening up a new gate for the world of agriculture. So I'd love if you could just talk a little bit about this new project that you're going on, because that to me also sounds very much in line with your values, right? Providing people a way to actually create a good, honest living from the land, and also using kind of high-tech, low-tech combinations here to make it happen.
So I think Israel has three basic resources. And by the way, resource is the wrong word, elements that make it up.
Okay.
And by the way, each of them was like a core movement in the historical states of Israel.
Right? Okay.
There's been three states of Israel over time.
Sure.
One is the land.
Okay.
Like when we came in the time of Joshua, but also when the early pioneers came back in the late 1800s and early 1900s, they wanted to set up the kibbutz movement.
Right.
It was about the land.
Right.
And then
going out there, working, tilling everything. Right.
And then the second thing is what I would call the knowledge or the spirit of the people of the book,
okay,
as we're often called, which was kind of the innovation of Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai after the destruction of the Second Temple.
Okay.
You know, we kind of folded the state of Israel up post-destruction into a people of the book. And we've carried that with us through 2,000 years of exile,
right,
and brought it back here.
The learn-it-alls, if you will.
The learn-it-alls, very good. And then the third one is this kind of innovation, which, you know, Jews throughout the diaspora have been famous for. It goes back to the time of Joseph,
mm-hmm,
and maybe even Jacob, even where innovations...
Even Abraham.
Maybe. You know, Jacob innovated kind of breeding.
Sure. Where,
you know, the spotted and the speckled sheep. And
sure.
Joseph innovated long-term storage. And,
right,
you know, saved the economy of Egypt. And Jews have been innovating throughout history. And that's startup nation.
Right.
And that's the third element. So we've got the land. We've got the people, the book, the learn-it-alls. And then we've got innovation. I think those are three pillars and three areas that I want to be involved in. I always had this dream, as the venture business got better, that I would have a vineyard.
Okay.
Why do I want to have a vineyard? And grow the seven fruits of the land. That was kind of my thing, because that was having a piece of the rock.
But you really wanted to have like that, like, kind of dealing with a vineyard?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And by the way, I've done that. I own a farm.
There's a vineyard now.
I own a farm.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Now, in the kind of central north of the country where we grow grapes, and we grow figs, and we grow pomegranates.
Okay.
And we grow
all seven fruits, basically.
Organic veggies. We don't have barley and wheat.
Okay.
And that was always a passion project of mine, because you got to touch on the land makes you humble.
Okay.
The land connects you deeply to roots. And as part of kind of my farming passion, I got hooked up probably 11 or 12 years ago now with an organization called the Shomer HaChadash, the New Guardians.
The New Guard. And what does that mean, basically, in the context of Israel and also, let's just say, innovation?
So about 100 years ago, a guy named Alexander Zayed set up the first Guardians,
okay,
the HaShomer movement, because at the time, Jewish farmers and ranchers needed to be protected from Arab marauders.
Okay.
At the time, and he, on his horses, protected the farmers and ranchers. We've had agricultural terrorism here for the last, I don't know, long time, but it really, really got bad 12 or 13 years ago, and this guy, Yoel Zilberman, a founder in his own right,
sure,
just of a non-for-profit, set out to protect his father's farm and moved up to a hilltop with a tent and some books, because book and land. And
people were actually like attacking his farm?
His father's farm.
And burning stuff and...
Cutting the fences, wow, and burning stuff,
okay,
and stealing his sheep and his cattle. And Yoel went up there and protected it. And all of a sudden, people from all around, the farmers from all around, came up and said, "We got the same problem." And this is now turned...
This is 12 or 13 years ago they had this problem?
We still have it today.
Wow.
It's not gone. But the Shomer HaChadash, the New Guardian, is now the largest volunteer movement in Israel. It has over 100,000 volunteers, 100,000 days at farms, protecting farmers and ranchers, working the farms,
okay,
et cetera. And I joined the board, I can't remember how many years ago it is now, 10, 11 years ago, of this organization, while starting my own farm.
Okay.
Started with a vineyard initially.
So you're putting your money where your mouth is, basically.
Kind of. I'm really putting my time, because time is more valuable than money at the end of the
day.
And through the Shomer HaChadash, and this movement has grown, it wasn't always 100,000 volunteers, we started to understand different problems. So the first thing we understand is it's not enough just to have a volunteer movement.
Mm-hmm.
We need to empower farmers. The average age of a farmer in Israel is 66.
So we're dying.
It's a big problem.
Yeah.
It's a real challenge.
Okay.
They should all live long lives, but we need new young farmers.
But it sounds like we're in a very big problem then as a society.
We are.
Okay.
You know, farmers provide our food. Farmers secure borders, right?
Right?
The farms are in the south and the north and
100%.
And in the east. And so we need farmers. So we said, how are we going to get farmers to come in? Protection's not enough. It needs investment.
Okay.
So at the Shomer HaChadash, we've now started this fund.
Okay.
I should say we've started to form the fund. It's not
right.
yet raised. Which is going to invest in young farmers. Now, young farmers, like young tech entrepreneurs, are more innovative. It's not
okay.
like the old grow the watermelon thing.
Right, okay.
Right? They want to do more innovative stuff. So, for example, I have a private investment in a company called Vanilla Vita.
Okay.
Which is a company that's producing vanilla in Israel. Vanilla normally only grows in like Madagascar
sure.
and a few other places.
Right.
And so you go, oh, that's innovative. And so if we can put together a fund that does a couple of things, It one, invests in and enables young farmers to get going. Two, enables a more innovative form of farming, which sometimes takes more startup capital. Three, is able to invest in the land asset, which, by the way, is a great inflation hedge.
Okay.
We can kind of enable the next generation of farmers to come and therefore really advance the goal of this movement, which is to take hold of the land through learning, doing, and our connection to it.
So how are you accessing, though, these young people, right? Because at the end of the day, it seems like, don't get me wrong here, right? But let's be honest, right? I'm in Tel Aviv. I got my, you know, nice, building. I have, my company's taking care of my lunch. I have my, my scooter. I mean, and this could be, talked about elsewhere in the world, too. But I have that. What makes me want to go and all of a sudden say, you know what? I'm going to start a farm.
Well, one of the things we didn't know before we got started is, would anyone turn up?
Right. I mean, it seems kind of almost counterintuitive.
That's the question you're kind of asking. So I also wasn't sure that anyone would turn up. Okay. There's another nut like me who wanted to start a farm.
Right, okay.
And so we did this process. And it's a process I learned through something I set up during COVID, which was called the Medina Lemofet, or Exemplary Nation.
Okay.
We were trying to solve problems of employment in Israel.
Uh-huh.
And we built a methodology that set a future framework in place. Like,
okay.
And in this case, for me, okay, we want to invest in young farmers who will take pieces of land in the periphery of the country and bring their families there to live.
Sure.
And do you have an innovative idea or a business plan?
Okay.
And we did what they call in Israel a kol kore, but it's more like, okay, we put out a fishnet,
okay,
or some fly paper and said, sure, okay, who's got a good idea? And guess what? 250 plus people turned up with ideas.
Really?
And say, I want to start a farm. I got an innovative agricultural idea. Now, it's all these cases, more than half of them are like, okay.
Yeah, like, yeah, right. Okay, sure.
Yeah. But, in there was like 40, 50 that you'd go.
Well, there's a vanilla guy in there, right? Who says, I'm going to.
No, he was already set up.
Oh, he was already set up. Okay.
And already raised money. But there was another kind of 40 or 50. You go, oh, that's interesting. So we hired two people and said, okay, get at it.
Okay.
And we whittled it down to kind of five or six.
Okay.
That we think are viable.
Sure.
And then decided we're only going to do two to start, probably.
Okay.
And that's what we're up to right now. We're starting to pull the money together.
Okay.
Soon. There's real technical challenges with it, which is what we're working through. Regulatory issues. I mean, there's a million things you got to get through. But that's where we're at. And it's going to work. Like, there is pent-up demand for people to reconnect to this land, to start a farm, to start an innovative farm.
Sure.
To raise their families in the outdoors. I think COVID maybe had something to do with that.
Sure.
And to kind of have this pioneering spirit, which was part of the pioneering spirit of the start of the state 100 plus years ago.
Sure.
And it always happens kind of after four or five generations that people go back to the roots. And I think that's what we're up to right now. And the Shomer Chadash and this fund is tapped into that going back to the roots, but in our own kind of unique startup nation-y way.
Okay.
And the twisted way, with a twist, not a twisted way.
Not a twisted way. We'll take it like that. Now, what do you also consider innovative farming? Because you've said that a few times, right? And like, to me, it's like, okay, vanilla in Israel, that's like groundbreaking. But I don't know if it's innovative, right? It's like innovative in the sense that you're doing something truly new, but it's kind of also like you're really just changing the framework. What is innovative to you? Is it how you're farming? Is it what you're farming? Is it that you're using drones to, monitor your crops? What is innovative to you?
I think it's anything that gives you a significant competitive advantage over the long term, because these aren't charities. These need to be businesses.
Okay.
And so if you've got a new crop that otherwise can't get here, interesting. If you've got a technology innovation, for example, in the vanilla case, they have, I think it's four times the amount of vanillin, which is the active ingredient in vanilla.
Oh, like the actual, plant, basically?
Yeah.
Okay.
Vanillin in each pod of vanilla. Whoa!
Yeah.
That's a drama, because you can't get organic vanilla. Most of the vanilla, by the way, you get in your food is synthetic.
Right, isn't it? Oil. It's all processed, basically.
No,
right?
No, it's synthetic. It comes from oil. It's not even processed. Okay. It's synthetic. And so, maybe it's, I can cover 10 times as much land because I got drones. It could be a million things. It could be I have a unique brand. I have a unique location.
And okay.
It's hard to judge. One of the things you learn in investing is it's hard to think through all the things that people will do. The distributed population of entrepreneurs is a better idea than you and I do of what's interesting. So.
Sure. Especially also if you're, really in and, checked into that type of field, right?
100%.
Agriculture, whatever it might be. Now, what's very interesting to me here is that, Israel, as we know, has a lot of agricultural issues in the sense that, we have desertification that's coming through. We've had to learn drip
irrigation.
No?
The world has desertification.
And Israel?
We know how to deal with desertification.
So that's what I want to talk to you about.
So we're really good at this. We're built for the world that we're living in right now.
Okay.
Which is desertification, lack of water, etc. Drip irrigation is invented in Israel.
Right.
Okay. recycling of sewage water in Tel Aviv that goes down into the Negev and waters the crops. We're good at that.
Okay.
That's most of the water supply for the crops in the Negev desert come from the sewage of Tel Aviv. It's called Shafdan.
Okay.
The Dan area is the Tel Aviv area. And so we are actually at the forefront of this. It's why, by the way, any country that decides not to take our desalination are fools. We're way ahead of this.
So that's what I want to know right here. Is the goal here also to build this out so that you can kind of pilot this out to other nations?
Yes.
Yeah?
But I'll say more than that. I think Israel is a model for the future of the world, and we need to embrace that.
Okay. And, what do you mean by that?
You know, we have a population brought from all four corners of the world, and maybe if there's a fifth corner, we brought it from there, too.
Okay.
And so we have a population that's come from a diverse set of backgrounds,
sure.
Even if many of them are Jewish, meaning the majority are Jewish. They still have diverse backgrounds. They come from different cultures, and we're making that work.
Uh-huh.
Whereas the rest of the world is struggling with, you know, they all want to talk about multiculturalism. At the end of the day, it's fracturing societies.
And right.
That's something I think we can teach the world. Getting a lot out of a little in a resource-constrained world. You know, how do you get a lot of a little? We're a resource-constrained country.
Right.
A natural resource-constrained country until we found gas, that is. But now, you know, we showed how you get the most out of every drop of water. We showed how you can take the seawater and turn it into drinking water.
Uh-huh.
And so in a resource-constrained world, I think we're a model. And I think the last element is, how do you take innovation and apply it to every part of society?
Right.
It's not just software in Tel Aviv. It's also the latest technology innovation at the farm. And I think, for what it's worth, I think this marrying of the land, the book, the innovation is who we are as a people.
Well, it's kind of like a rebranding, right? Of almost the tech nation, right? It's like saying, like, you know what? Tech doesn't have to be, as you just said, hardware and software. It can also be really just, how do you change processes? How do you adapt to the situation you find yourself in? Now, have you guys had interest already from other nations in your project?
Well, kind of, one.
Yeah, can you talk about it at all? Or?
No.
No, it's a little too early at this point.
You know, the water and agriculture minister of another country came to visit a lot of the work we're doing in education and in farming in the desert.
Really?
And I'll leave it at that.
Wow. So that's actually like truly this kind of mission for you, right?
The
whole idea of light unto the nations, right? Because if you go back also to like your whole idea of connection to the land and stuff like that, you know, the Jewish people, Israel being this kind of light unto the nations, it's kind of like, you know, I see this kind of theme coming out of your activities. Now, is Aleph also, you know, as a VC?
By the way, I should just make clear.
Sure.
The agricultural stuff is not under Aleph. That's under me personally.
That's what I wanted to ask there. So is Aleph is totally separate then?
Yeah, Aleph does its job of basic, you know, we would invest in ag tech, but it's not what this is. This is like almost a venture studio or an investment studio. It's not even venture per se. It could be private equity or buying land, like I said, that exists in this not-for-profit called the Shomer HaChadash.
And is the government at all involved in the Shomer HaChadash? Not at all?
I mean, the government funds some of the non-profit activities of the Shomer HaChadash, but this is a for-profit fund that exists in the Shomer HaChadash, and the government is not involved in it, no.
Interesting. Do you think that we need the government to be more involved?
Involved
really?
In what?
It kind of involved in this idea of, you know, really changing the way we deal with our land. Because at the end of the day, you made a very interesting point here, which is that the average age of the farmer is 66. The way I see it, what you just kind of talked about, is we're in a crisis. Because basically in the next 10, 20 years, we may not even have farmers to make our food.
That's
so at the end of the day, what does that mean? How can the government kind of help us to get there? Because, yeah, sure, you guys are doing great stuff. You're bringing these guys. You're giving them money. You're helping them set themselves up. But at the end of the day, if we're not teaching kids to go down that path, if we're not helping people to understand that this is a viable life source, what are we really doing?
Jordan, why did you start this podcast?
Why did I start the podcast? To bring tech to the world, to kind of make it accessible to people so that high-tech people interested in high-tech can also learn about it, get into it, and also understand how they can make their impact.
Did the government tell you to do this?
No.
Who inspired you to do this?
Honestly, tech entrepreneurs.
So if we can inspire a generation of people
that
this is possible and enable them to do it through capital, that's the best way to get people to do it. I've never seen the government, other than through conscription, getting people to do the things that need to get done.
So you're saying that it has to be private sector?
Needs to be civic movements.
Civic movements.
People need to decide themselves that they're going to be responsible. They need to ask themselves, what's my responsibility to this country, to my people, to this world? And I hope if we set an example, they'll come and do that. Just like you want to set an example because you were inspired by other tech people.
Interesting. I like that idea. Now, we're getting towards the end of the podcast, so I'm going to ask you one last question that I really kind of want to understand. You know, you have this burning passion, obviously, for tech and for the land and for Israel and for all these things. What is your advice for kind of the young people right now who are going to be listening to this podcast, who are listening to someone who has a VC fund, or who started this whole project for also bringing people into agriculture. What's your advice for them?
First of all, I didn't start the project to bring for the Shomer HaChadash. That was Yoel's.
That you're partnering with, yeah. We could say.
Who's going to listen to this? Where are they?
All around the world. You can hear, say it to all around the world, truly.
So there's two things I would say. One in a more particular sense and the other in a more global sense.
Okay.
In a more particular sense, Israel is still a young project. It's a very important project for the future of the world, mm-hmm. and for the future of the Jewish people. If you're listening to this and asking yourself, what's your place in the world? Come here and join the project. There's a lot to do here, and it's a small country. And in a small country, you can be a big fish very quickly. And so you can have an impact that's way outsized to where you think you are in the world. So come join the project. That's the first more particular piece I'll say about Israel and people who care about this place and the future of the world. And to a broader audience, the question you should be thinking about, I think, is what's my responsibility? There's not enough discussion in the world about what is my responsibility as an individual, as a community, for what's going on out there. This guy's an idiot. This guy's a fool. This guy's terrible. And by the way, and I need to defend my rights.
Okay.
I'm standing up for my rights.
Right.
And all I'll say to those people is, if you stand for your rights, you stand for nothing. Stand up for and ask yourself, what's my responsibility for other people? What's my responsibility for the future of society? And if we can change the dialogue from I need my rights to I'm taking responsibility, we'll create a better world.
I like that. That's a great way to end. Thank you, Michael Eisenberg, so much for coming on the show. Really appreciate it. As always, everyone throw a listen if you can. And I really appreciate you being here.
Thanks for having me, Jordan.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.